Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. We are heading towards the end of September. I have a jiu-jitsu fight this weekend. It's my first one. I've been training on and off for a while now. It's quite a daunting experience, getting down to the right weight and fighting some other balding, approaching middle-aged man. My focus has been all on that this week. And I'm trying to get my head into a bit of work today. We're heading into London to meet people on our mastermind and some people that we're doing a strategy session for. I've got loads of news in our consulting side of our business. It's now kind of creeping up to being about 60% of what we do, which I suspect that'll keep increasing and it'll be probably the most important part of our business. Still doing rec to rec. Deals are happening like yous all. I mean, the market's good. Candidates are hard to find, are hard to, you know, engage with. We can all find them. But the market's good and, you know, I'm just grateful that we're in business in a good place, have a good amount of recurring revenue in our business. And a lot of that, you know, is I've had the influence of Andy Hallett around for a long time now. And, you know, he just kept drumming that in, like you need to start the month with recurring revenue in your business, and you have options then to do what you want to do. And I've really tried to change that side of our business and, you know, help other people that we're coaching as well. So yeah, into London today to meet the gang of mastermind people. And yeah, it's going to be great. Today's guest, before I keep blabbing on here, is Guy Walker from Talentia Group. He has more energy than one human should be allowed. He has been in recruitment for a little bit, then went out on his own and just has this infectious energy. And he scaled up massively over the last 6 months, got different offices, started off as an education recruiter, doing multidiscipline now, specialist within it, but has just been growing like month on month. And he's pretty honest. Like it's not always perfect and he doesn't always make the right calls, but he does it with good intentions and he tries to execute as best as he can, and it seems to be working out for him. So hope you guys enjoy this one. Guy is in our WhatsApp community, The Bridge, and that's for like companies, you know, if you're 10 to 50 in terms of your headcount, so you're not the principal biller anymore, so you've got different problems, and you know, we try and get like a real vetted top people in there, and you know, it's a great source of information, and we're going to have a few meetups happening soon. Our other community is the startup community, the Dinghy, and that's flying. God, there's like 250 founders, and you know, they're all independent or under five in their headcount, and it is off the hook with information. So look, if you want to join either of these communities, you want to come hang out with other founders, want to get into a bit more peer-to-peer learning or whatever it is that you're interested in, just hit me up on LinkedIn and I will send you an invite if you fit the profile. All right, have a great day. Enjoy the sunshine. And as ever, I am available if you reach out to me. Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. I'm joined today by Guy Walker from Talentia Group. How are you today, buddy?
Yeah, make and do, my friend. Got a little bit of a cold, but at least it's not COVID. It's the positive end of it, right? Or not so positive, as the case might be.
All right, pal. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. You're in our group for scalable leaders, The Bridge. You've been getting some good information out of that over the past year.
For sure. I think you learn quite a lot just by listening. I've definitely seen lots of conversations about the best CRM to use, and that's probably a hot topic, actually, because getting that wrong from the outset for people that are coming up from the lower groups, you get that wrong and you've got to change it all around again. So I've learned quite a lot, and there's a lot of contributors in that group for sure.
You didn't make it to our last party. Will you get to our Christmas party in London?
I was too hungover from the day before for the last one. If you give me the date again, ping it back round, I'll definitely see if I can get some tickets, because I know that there's a lot of good recruiters, and I know a few suppliers are there as well.
Yeah, well, we definitely. It was pretty big party the last time. I suppose today what we're going to cover is some of your journey in entrepreneurship, and probably trying to get into some of the challenges of, okay, once you have it up, how do you knit it all together, and how do you kind of keep all the balls in the air? Because it's fair to say you're a bit of a hyperactive fella, isn't it?
I'd absolutely agree with that. I think all contract recruiters are.
Yeah. So how did it all begin for you?
I'm a contract recruiter. Yeah. So I've been in recruitment for coming up to 9 years. I was a 500k a year biller for an education recruitment company. I kind of jacked that all in for the ballsy world of entrepreneurship, whatever you want to call it, 3.5 years ago, and set out with the kind of mission to do things a little bit differently from an education standpoint. And then the hyperactivity kicked in from there. And definitely started a few cool ideas and some definite things that need to be forgotten about and thrown back into the trash. So it's been an interesting journey.
Have you got a vetting process for whenever you have an idea? Or does everybody just go, okay?
So there's no vetting process at the minute, but we've just hired a business analyst. So let's hope that guy has a good idea and sends that back and vets whatever I send to him, because otherwise we're going to run aground shortly. We've had some crazy ones.
My process, because I'm a bit like that as well. I usually give an idea, I'll give it to my marketing manager, and then she'll kind of be like, it might have legs or it might not. Mm. And then I'll go, okay. So then I'll go to Charlotte and I'll be like, hey, Char, what do you think? And she'll say, no. And then I usually go, hey, Andy, who works as an advisor with us sometimes, and is my partner in Recwired, I'll say to him, and he'll go, well, if Charlotte won't do it with you, I'll do it with you. And I'll go back to Charlotte and she'll go, start cursing, and then she kind of go, okay, well, let me look at it a bit more carefully. She'll flesh it out, and then she'll go, look, it's either going to work or it's not. So my madness gets filtered throughout. It's good.
You've got a good advisor in Andy, because his job, obviously, his last role was to basically spend money on cool ideas and figure out if it works. Yeah. So if he spins back and says it's a good idea, then great. I reckon we could probably all book a day with Andy and crack on from there. He's definitely got the knowledge. He's definitely blown some money on some pretty crazy stuff, but I think quite a lot of the things he invested in and chose for that previous group have worked out. So you've definitely got a good choice there, and Charlotte, of course, as well.
Yeah. So setting up you're only 3.5 years in, hey? So you've done really well. Before we go into the start, what do you currently sit at? What's your head count?
Cool. We are a head count of 43 with 9 offers in the pipeline to grads and consultants. So we've done okay in 3.5 years. I'd say we operate across 5 sectors at the moment with a view to kind of, I think there's only one more sector we cover off. So as a group, the next step is to kind of scale and grow in those sectors and take it to a point where I could be like, I don't really want to be here, and join the background that you're in. But that's a journey for sure. So I'll follow you, but I think you'll get there ahead of me.
Well, I definitely won't headcount. I have no interest in that. That is a ton of work. So did you say 9 sectors?
Not, we've got 5 sectors. Got a view to be in 6. So we've only got one more sector to cover off.
Wow. Okay. So, and what are that range from?
Construction. Do you know what? It starts from food manufacturing and production. We've got a large contract there. That's bottom end. That's sort of £1 margin business, all the way up to tech and high finance, basically. And then we're looking at 100 a day margins from there and upwards, which is the full spectrum, because I can go from coaching a consultant how to speak to a food manufacturing person and how to find those candidates via text message, WhatsApp and Facebook ads. And then we're going on to LinkedIn Recruiter and doing a kind of reverse headhunt. And it's a very interesting conversation to flow from, if I'm honest with you. But it happens 3 times a day.
Does the variety keep you going?
I blame that squarely on ADHD, but I think, yes, it probably keeps quite exciting for some of the consultants. They don't know what's going to happen next. But that kind of experience means that when people are learning at this business, they tend to learn the full spectrum of qualification. So they can talk in pretty much any sector and be pulled to pick bits up outside of their sector and learn. And we can only do that because we've got a CRM that works across all brands. So you click a button and you're in a different sector.
What one did you go with?
We've got 720, which is based off Salesforce platform, works brilliantly. But obviously, you've got Vincere and Bullhorn
as
well.
We've got Luxo. We moved to it.
I've heard brilliant things, not just from your chat, but from other areas as well. So if I wasn't in a lengthy contract like you are mostly with CRMs, I'd be looking at it from here.
Yeah, I think it's a great product. For the larger businesses, there's probably some analytic work that they have in the pipeline that'll make it like foolproof. Mm. But for the smaller segmentation of businesses that doesn't rely so much on that, the outreach and the automation and how it takes four different things and puts them all together. So you're not trying to knit together lots of different things. It's really a game changer, especially for a really small business like ours. I know you joke, I'm the reluctant rec-to-rec. So it does form a part of our business. And for that, the guys in it just love it. So it's been really good.
We built a custom deal system from day one. So instead of having your core CRM where you store your deals, we've got that as a backup, but we have a deal entry system, pings the email around to all the safeguarding leads in all the different areas. But that gives us all the analytics at real time speed, rather than sort of week or two behind or looking at the CRM once a week. We get it immediately. We built that, and actually that helped us grow from 5 to where we are now. And so having that upfront analytics is probably something that we don't need, but other businesses might see beneficial for sure.
Early days, how'd you get the money?
Oh, tough question there. So my mother passed away. She left me 15 grand. So it's a tough one, mate, but it's definitely what changed my view on working for someone else without kind of dreams and ambitions and goals and just kind of plodding along, loving the recruiter lifestyle.
Yeah.
Absolutely bevied 7 nights a week and loving it and obviously enjoying it at the time, to go and I think there's more to life than the pub downstairs. We can get out of that. So we had 15 grand, and then I borrowed a little bit of money from family and friends, really, when we needed it and to get out the traps early. I could probably have started it on 5 grand, but I think the rule of thumb is you need 3 months of salary, otherwise you're going to suffer. And I probably didn't have quite enough for my lifestyle at the time, so my lifestyle suffered initially. And that's not something I'd do again. Me and my boxers and my t-shirt for the first 6 months, just sort of grafting away, I had a non-compete initially. So I started off doing construction, which was just me kind of picking up the phone and cracking on, ringing construction companies, being like, do you want this? Have it. Great. And I was an education recruiter. So after my 6 week non-compete, I then went into education after getting sued and having my last final paycheck withheld by my last employer. So I had I'd say for a startup journey, if anyone wants any advice on how to stick it to the man, I definitely had an interesting start from the beginning.
And then how quickly did you know that you were going to hire people straight away? Was that like, you were like, okay, I've got a vision. Like what did the early vision look like?
So I obviously knew what I was bringing in. So I had a team of 7 when I was at my last employer. So I had a large team. I knew that I could get jobs in and pass it around and make what was probably like a £7 million turnover team. So we were making good money. So I knew that if I could get people through the door quickly, we'd be able to get up and running even quicker. So I made my first hire, which was my best friend and now managing director for Dovetail, which was Elliot Redmond. And he was the kind of catalyst to be like, right, I don't like training people. I'm got any patience. I'm crap at it. You're patient. You're a little bit more like steady. You can work with the trainees and get them through. And so when he came on board, his job was to train people and my job was to hire them and bring all the business in. And that worked brilliantly up until I think about 15 people when a pandemic hit. But for the initial start, you've got to pick that first hire so right to counter your skill set.
Yeah.
Because I'm whatever, get on, throw your toys in the air and make something happen and hope there's some cash behind you as you run through. Whereas Elliot's a bit more methodical and puts that time into them and gets them training, I'd be like, just do it. And if you can't do it, then don't do it. Whatever, get on. I don't mind. So that's so important to counter your skill set when your first hire comes through. Don't hire someone identical to you, because then you're just going to clash all the time. Whereas I've to this day never had an argument with him about anything work related.
People make that mistake lots, you know. And it's down to ego. So you're like, well, I'm the man. You know, so I should hire somebody who's going to be the next me, but they're not going to want to do the stuff that you don't want to do. So, I'm pretty lucky that Charlotte does that. And then she's built a whole team around that. And then in our other business, Andy does one thing, Charlotte does one thing, and then I do one thing. So it's all pretty handy. And
split your skill set. I'm terrible at internal recruitment, terrible at training. So now we have a managing director, talent manager. I'm terrible at finance. Yeah, finance manager. So I built the platform for me to be able to scale really quickly, early doors, get everyone in your heads of departments, and then you start growing your teams out from there on a really strong platform. So I overspent in my first year and a bit, lost a lot of money, but had the right team to see me through from the other side. Yeah. So now the platform we've got is every head of department's in place. That's my stable core team. Without them, I'd be a little bit lost. And then we grow from there. And that's at them never to be quite flexible in whatever market we're in.
How did you grow in the pandemic?
As a lot of people are learning, specifically some pretty shady RetoRex or recruitment startup people, gurus, education is a pretty gold-plated market, right? It's people work through it. People are busy. We immediately, as soon as the pandemic hit, hired a full-time marketing manager. So we knew the battle wasn't going to be won by bashing the phones through a pandemic.
Yeah.
Christ, that's never going to work. They're not sat at their desk. They're not at work. They're at home. So we hired a manager for marketing, and they made sure we were ever present where we needed to be. I stripped my team back to basically me and my PA for the first month. I was like, Christ, this isn't good. This is bad, bad. And then brought back top billers as and when they were needed. So I think we had about four of us in the office, not working in the office, but four of us working. And that meant that our clients thought we were flat out busy, and we were, considering there was four of us. We dropped down from a business of 20 to four. So yeah. We were very busy, but not busy enough to have 20 people working. So we just gradually came back from there. But because we were the only one that fully stayed in people's minds, we looked like we were fully open. Mm. Clients believed in that kind of dream. And when, as we ramped up, we picked up loads of COVID testing contracts. We picked up loads of stuff that other agencies weren't ready or willing to do.
Yeah.
And people just came to us because they knew we were there. We were ready to work. And that allowed us to get back quicker than I think many others did.
Do you follow a plan, or do you just kind of react instinctively?
Wish I had a plan. Some days I wish I had this really clear written out plan that guided us there. But the recipe stays the same. So I'd say, yeah, I follow a recruitment plan. The recipe doesn't ever deviate, right? You get in, you put your effort in your direction that works for that market or sector. That doesn't change. But how we do that, I've got only a very rough plan, and I reckon it's written on the back of a fag packet if I smoke. So no, but one thing I think as a recruitment owner, I definitely would love someone to come along and build something that works for me as a plan, something with pictures, ideally, pretty ones if you can find them.
Yeah.
But nothing concrete, no.
Cool. No, just curious. I mean, that's probably allowed you to pivot like you did in that pandemic. What lessons did you learn from the pandemic? What are you doing differently?
More flexible working, but I think I learned that from you.
Did you?
Yeah, no. I initially was like, keeps banging on about it, but maybe there's some secret to it. So we have...
There is, but it's hard to get the same amount of work out of people.
So I have my three top performers. My actual three best consultants all work from home.
That doesn't surprise me. That's not the problem. It's the new people. It's the people who can't learn from like all the osmosis that happened before.
I don't have a solution to that. And if anyone happens to discover it, I'll write you a check. So if you can figure out how to get my three top billers to train the next lot of top billers from their homes without ever kind of coming into the office to train them, want or not want, if you can figure that out for me, I've got a blank check with your name on it, because those guys are so ready to manage.
How about every time one of your top billers records an interview, an electric shock gets zapped into a rookie?
You just make them lick the battery at the time. That's much safer option. That sounds expensive, whereas you can just go lick the battery. It's your turn. That'd be nice. I'll figure something, but that's not going to win you the blank check, unfortunately.
So... what's the greatest challenge at the moment? Like, you've hired a bag of rookies.
The rookies aren't the challenge. Like most recruitment companies, we're overstretched for jobs, right?
Yeah.
So thus born is the delivery consultant, which I'm damn sure is still a recruitment resourcer, but whatever, we're well with it. So you've got delivery consultants and resources in essence. So we start people almost on a 180 basis.
Yep.
So that's not my biggest challenge. I think my biggest challenge is quality of service, you know. So making sure that people, even your best follow up, your best communicate effectively, your best generate trust from a relationship. They always say no one can do it as well as you, but I've found myself recently handing over good clients that I've brought on and have been with me for a long time and then gone, Christ, that's not gone well. So quality of service will always be a recruitment company's challenge, especially as you scale. I think that's the bit. You've got to learn to trust people, but you need to put safeguards in place to prevent problems from occurring.
I know what we did at Robert Walters for that. Do you have like any specific processes that you run to make that happen?
Less a process, more of a function. So you need to have a client relationship function. And so we have a strategic partnerships director whose job is to make sure the relationships with clients and candidates stay tip top. But even having that function is an acknowledgement you value a client relationship.
Yeah.
So from as early doors as you can get it in. I did a poll the other day on when you should be a non-billing manager, between 10 and 20, minus 10, whatever.
Yeah, it's a good question.
When health freeze is over was my option. But anyway, whatever. So you need to early doors address that and give them a space that they can come out and have a conversation and be totally honest. They're never going to be totally honest with me. I'm biased. Whatever they say, I'm going to try and counter. Whereas they feel actually that Harry works on their behalf. And I feel when you're accountable and you work to kind of work with the client instead of against them,
See anybody who's been sold to be a non-billing manager, let me tell you what's going to happen. The second there's a dip in the market, you're getting fired. 100%. And whenever you come to me and you tell me I haven't been billing in 2 years because I was doing this, I'll go, I can't help you.
Yeah, it's
the market's
really
not strong. So don't do it. Like, do it if you're at a big corporate and you're going through the ranks and there's a clear path. But it's so hard to resell that skill set because, like, ultimately, the way I see a career going is one, you're able to either get up to the higher echelons, and as that company sells, you get a good slice of the business,
yep.
or you learn the skills to set up by yourself.
Yep.
And then you're out. The non-billing manager.
Where does he fit? So where does she fit? Sorry, where do they fit? So
yeah.
So I cut
customer
a slice
success, a customer success person is different.
I cut a slice the other day. So one of our biggest areas is construction education. I cut a slice in the middle and called it a director's market. And it was essentially going to be my little pocket market. I probably did this about 6 months ago. And it was enough to keep someone who does 4 and a bit days working on the business and could do half a day and just tick something over and keep it busy.
Yeah.
And that's the idea. It's the same as a knife sharpener. I'm not going to sit on the shelf like blunt and dull. I need to keep busy. So that market was spec'd deliberately for me to keep that area hot. And we've just done the same for the managing director. It's not a huge market. It's not massive, but maybe he gets 20 jobs a month and he fills 5 of those. So he still can
He's
build.
Still billing now.
He knows. Yeah, he knows the process, how to do a deal. He's on the stats. He's not necessarily on the boards competing against his consultants and his team leaders, but he's definitely still sharp.
Like, we can always learn. Like, we're always behind the software world because glorified call center managers, like, how do you get them to think like software companies is the key. And like a customer success manager could be that relationship manager, and that person doesn't really need recruitment experience. You can bring somebody in at a junior level and you just set their accountabilities of how they go about things. The billing manager, though, you need to keep them being the billing manager. Hardest people to find. I'd give you my left testicle for a good billing manager right now.
When my CV comes up, I'll send it over to you.
All right. Thank you. So other challenges. Come on, keep them coming. What do we have?
Finance. Know your numbers. There's some really good people.
Pay somebody to do that, eh?
There's someone in another chat that I know of, run by another organization that I know of, that's brilliant. I, early doors, didn't realize that finance systems didn't account for VAT. I got myself into a bit of a sticky wicket there. Early doors, get it wrong. I don't like to fail hard, fail fast, fail often. So in future, use a finance system, realize it does need you to account for VAT.
Yeah.
And get it sorted early doors. So if you need to outsource that for your first 1 to 9, do that and feel safe and secure the numbers you're getting are relevant and right.
Yeah.
Because I had to hire a finance manager that's done a fantastic job, but had to pull me out of shit. And I would never want to be in that sticky wicket again. So finance is, and always will be, a recruiter's biggest challenge, because we love to spend as much as we love to earn. And you need to know what you're doing in the middle of it. So outsource your finance team initially if you don't have the expertise to do it yourself.
What's the story with, do you have a certain trigger of when you hire?
Yeah, so we work on we're a pretty low end basis here. So we work on 8K. So if a consultant generates 8K for themselves and 8K for the next person, they can hire someone. And when their team then has 16K, they can hire another. When they're 24, they can have another. So really simple. And also we've got fail safes at a group level. So if profit dips beneath a special number, which isn't relevant to anyone really, but it's a safe number for us, we stop, we put a hire on. I personally will ring, hasn't happened yet, but I will ring any of those grads that are fresh to start or any consultants that are fresh to start in that month and personally apologize, but then delay them. So we're not putting the rest of the business at risk, because they've seen me hire on a spree, lose the company money and have to cut commission and have conversations with people privately about how difficult it is. So we have fail safes in action to protect me and the business and everyone else out there that's working hard, making good money, so that I can't spend it underneath them. So they always get paid. And that's so important.
What about binning people? How quick do you do it? What's your cutoff? What's your process? What's your hard?
But when to get rid of someone, when to cut someone out?
Yeah, somebody, a rookie that's just started.
So we look at two things. So it's called insurance, right? If your activity is spot on and you're right, you've got as long as you want, because the failure then, if you're doing and putting in the effort, the failure is on us as a business. If your attitude is wrong, your activity isn't there, you've got 3 months of lifespan, haven't you really? Sometimes it's 6 months, because you might come in and we might know full well that actually we're taking a punt, but you've got it all there. It's just going to take you longer. We go into that with open eyes. But for me, effort and activity, and if they're there, we can definitely support that. But if it's not there, then that's the end of the journey, unfortunately.
What have you learned from taking on brand leaders? Don't trust what they told you they build for one thing.
Don't. What a tough job that is, Christ. Don't expect them to be like you.
Yeah.
So I think as an owner, you build businesses and you enjoy it and you are who you are. You got to where you are because of your skill set.
Yeah.
Don't then hire expecting them to match up with who you are. I'm not saying I'm as good as some of the people that have come through the business and not done it. I'm not saying I'm any better. I'm probably a worse person, if anything, but I also worked with them and tried to help people and not made it. So be very careful. You're better off finding great talent within one of your existing businesses, spotting someone that's able to transfer across and investing in them, than you are interviewing for a senior position, bringing them in and then throwing them straight off the deep end. If you interview them, bring them into an existing brand, see how they work and then put them out, makes total sense. Fresh, brand new brand, fresh, brand new person, fresh, brand new set of challenges. There's another way, absolutely another way to do that.
What does the future hold?
Next week's lottery numbers would be lovely. I see a boom for the next 2 to 3 years. I see a bit of a dip. I see we've got to adjust our lifestyles accordingly. Now we know what a pandemic feels like. It hurts. Don't go and buy that Ferrari that you've always wanted. It's a great idea. It feels great right now.
Don't move to Santa Barbara.
Don't go there. But the next few years will be great. Make hay while the sun shines. Get to a nice, stable place. But just expect a bit of a dip. Something's got to come from all of this. The fallout has to happen at some point. And I think we'll feel that in maybe 3 to 5 years. And then obviously we boom and bust, we love it again. It's capitalism in effect. I definitely see the future being very bright for recruitment. I'm a little scared. My risk register says that AI is gonna make life for a recruiter difficult. If you're a crap recruiter and you can't adapt to new technology, I think you might get a little bit left behind. But if you're willing to be a good recruiter and look at new trends, new technology and new changes and adapt with the times, then you should be safe. You should be, but who knows? If they make a robot called Guy Walker and he smashes it out of the park, I know who they copied.
Tell me, what about internationalization? That's a big word, isn't it?
Is it global internationalization or globalization? Flexible workforce.
Globalization is pretty much you saying I'm going to take over the world. Internationalization, from my understanding, is maybe you just going to America or going to Europe or
on track for me personally.
Yeah.
But there's two ways to do it, right? There's to go international because you want to work in a UK market, but you just want to be in the sun. So one of my consultants wants to go to Barcelona. I'm going to open a Barcelona WeWork, crack on. That makes total sense. Going to Barcelona to launch education recruitment might not be necessarily the big area. Maybe go and do construction, fine. But I'm not a billionaire. So launching an entire new market that doesn't exist in people's minds yet is beyond my financial capabilities. But going to an existing market in a foreign country and exploring that is definitely exciting. And not something ready for me just yet. But if you know any good Neds for that, I'm sure we can recommend some people. Andy's definitely got some good understanding there.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, look, that's it. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll get you down for a few beers at the...
I'll put the ticket. I will. I was too hungover for the last one, but that's a typical recruit trick. I'd room a load them out before. And
the last one was epic, eh? It was a great vibe. All right. Thanks very much for coming on. And I wish you continued success. And if anybody wants to join the Talentia revolution, shall we call it, what do they have to do?
Oh,
reach out to you on LinkedIn.
I've lost you there.
It's okay. All right, pal. Thank you.
See you later.